You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt, and on this episode, a conversation with Jay Harrison G. It's so fitting that we're releasing this on Valentine's Day because this whole episode really is about love. When we recorded this, and currently at the time we're releasing this, Jay is starring in the new musical Some Like It Hot at the Schubert Theater on Broadway. And of course, we talk about the show. But more than that, I feel like this conversation is a demonstration of what it means to rise above self-imposed limitations and societal binaries and live and embody what Jay calls intention, purpose, and love. I feel so grateful and humbled that we got to share a small moment in time together and that it will now live in the endless abyss that is the World Wide Web forever. So if you're in New York, do yourself a favor and go see Some Like It Hot. It is Broadway with a capital B, and it has a heart of gold that I might argue is Jay Harrison G. One other quick thing. About halfway through the episode, Jay notices my dog Penny getting a little restless behind me, so that's what that is. Thanks again for choosing to put this in your ear holes today. I can see on my end that you're out there, and it just makes my heart so, so happy. And I hope this episode does the same for you. So without further ado, please enjoy the ministry of Jay Harrison G. How are you feeling? How has it been?
It's great. It's good. I'm so full in every way. Like, the show is incredible. I get to work with incredible humans every day. And we have fun at work, not just because of the show, but because everyone is just like fun people. They're like, we cut up at work. And outside of that, like, I just feel like, oh, it's just like so much happening, and it's an exciting time.
That's good to hear. And that's one of the questions I always ask is like, how is this filling you up? You know, like, are you feeling filled up by what's going on? Because that's not always the case. It can be a grind, you know, because it is your job. I mean, it is work, but to know that it's like, it is filling you up, and like filling your heart up and your soul up, and you're feeling like fulfilled by what you're doing. That's like a huge gift. I imagine it hasn't always been that.
No, not always, but one of my mantras I live by is intention, purpose, and love. Those are the things I operate in. And so I try to do everything with intention, knowing what my purpose is, and do it all under the umbrella of love. And so even from joining Some Like It Hot back in 2019, doing the first reading for me, everything has been very intentional. And even how the process has grown and how it evolved, it's been very intentional and purposeful. And it's wonderful to receive the love from audiences, from the house and at the stage door, and those moments of people being seen and represented. And even stories of like our security guy, Leon, at the stage door, got to see the show opening night. He was very intentional about not watching or hearing anything sitting at the stage door. He would be there with full headphones, watching things, reading things, like, nope, I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. I want to like see the thing in its entirety from the front. Mm-hmm. And so he saw it opening night, and he was sitting next to like cisgender white man and whoever that guy was with. And I have my big number in act two, and guy applauded and then just turned to the lady he was with and goes, I need to treat my son better. And that with the intention, knowing what my purpose is, that's what I live for.
Is that moment.
Things like that, of like people feeling and shifting and growing and evolving through the work.
Yeah. Is that I was going to say, what is your intention in doing this piece and becoming a part of this piece? What was your intention initially when you first were like, okay, I'm going to go in. This seems like something I want to be a part of. How can I contribute? What was your intention?
What drew me to it was the journey I get to have as Jerry, as Daphne. And not only do it resonate personally with me, but it was something I hope to be a mirror and to show audiences of there's a little Daphne in everybody. And that doesn't mean you have to put a dress on. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, go run off and find the cutest lipstick or anything like that. But it's like, it's just giving yourself that permission to be free and allowing life and circumstances to break you of what you conditioned yourself or have been conditioned to live by.
Yeah.
You have to like see your, another thing I live by, you have to free yourself to see yourself. It is amazing to watch people process me in my everyday life. They're like, oh, this 6'4" black human is giving what today? What is happening? And for the longest time, it used to frustrate me of like people double taking or looking, even if I wasn't wearing anything necessarily outlandish. And now I have a better understanding of just being like, oh yeah, I'm doing something that they probably are like, and people do admit, they're like, oh, I could never. And I'm like, no, you just haven't freed yourself to see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't given yourself that space to expand.
And it feels like timely in the sense that this is something that I feel like, it feels like so much of the polarization that's happening and the frustration and the sort of anger that's bubbling up every day, sort of angst that's happening, is a direct result of people not being willing or not having the space to free themselves, not allowing themselves to, you know, it's really hard. And something I've learned like in the last few years, like it's very hard when you think something is true and you believe something to be truth, it is very vulnerable to admit that you're wrong. And whether that be about a fact or about something that you believe about yourself, the process of admitting that, oh, wait, I was wrong about this and what I thought and what I believed is actually not true, that's a very vulnerable process to have to go through to admit that you're wrong. And so I feel like I really am, I'm resonating with all the things you're saying. And I feel like I said, I just feel like it's timely in the sense that I feel like there's this urge. I feel it in myself and the people around me. There's this urge to break free of all the sort of constraints and the constructions that have been put up around us for years and years and years and years, hundreds of years, you know?
Yeah.
And we're kind of saying, no, not that. That why? Why do you think that? That's not even, we made that up. It's not real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I for the first time had the conversation recently with my mother about identifying as non-binary and what that means to me and my journey and exploration of that. And it, thankfully, my mother and I have always had a great relationship in communication. We've always just, whether it's made sense to her or not, we've always been able to have conversation, which I cherish and I relish and I'm grateful to her for that. Yeah. And so we were talking about family dynamics and things. And then we got into, I was like, hey, you know, it came up in a FaceTime and I was at work, you know, that I said non-binary. And she's like, well, when did you start using that word? I mean, I've seen it in interviews, but we haven't talked about it. So we made the time and the space. And I was just like, I've always felt other. Since I was a little kid, I've always felt different. I've always felt like, I'm not fitting into things that people are telling me should be so.
Yeah.
And that didn't make me feel bad, but I was just identifying it from a young age, but I didn't have the language for it, or I didn't have the freedom and the space to explore that. Because growing up in a Christian home, my father's a minister, like I was told I had to be certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been, since a kid, the inquisitive one over there, like, well, that doesn't make sense to me. Explain it to me. And then being like, stay in a child's place because I said so. Do the thing because this is what. And you're like, yeah, but y'all see this isn't working, right? The truth of the matter is, that's not true. That's okay, but we're gonna, great, we have to pretend. Got it. And so it's like, oh, I've been in acting class since I was a kid because I watched people play these games and play these parts for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, great, taking notes. Got it, got it. Yeah, that's what makes you feel that way. You are responding to that because of, but you don't want to identify that thing. Great. Okay. Uh-huh. And so now in my exploration as an adult, I always say that I'm fighting to get back to the innocence and purity of who I was as a child.
Right.
Before society, before family, before the world got in the way of who I was created to be.
Mm.
And so anytime I want to get to the purest version of myself, I check in with little me. Of like, ooh, who does that resonate with little me? No. Where did I pick that up? Who added that to my narrative and I took it on as my own, but it wasn't?
Yeah, whose voice is that? Because so many times I hear something in my head, I'm like, I didn't come up with that. That's not my voice. That's not me.
Where did
me.
I pick that up?
Right. Like that, where did that come from? So how has this show, and I guess really all the things that you've done, how has that impacted or what has that process been in sort of discovering who you are? How has the show been helpful in discovering who you are?
Oh, it frees me every day. It, in large ways and small ways, it reminds me to just check in with me. And again, identify those other voices. You know, with the show, even last night, there were moments of being like, just seeing more clearly the relationship I have with Christian, with his character, with Joe. And how, yes, I just follow along to begin with. But then it's like, oh, no. Daphne helps me break free and find my own voice and be like, oh, I've followed this human for so long because this was the brotherhood we created and this mm-hmm. is the relationship and the bond that got us by, but I can also exist on my own. I can also speak up for myself. I have an opinion. I have a point of view. Use it. Even in those moments where it feels uncomfortable, that's how growth happens.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think people forget. It's like we go through things in life and we're expected to remain the same. But evolution, there has to be a change. There has to be a shift. There has to be some kind of progressive movement. And that's uncomfortable. And even in talking about the theater and entertainment industry as a whole,
yes,
everybody's like, okay, you know, we're back to Broadway. How does this feel? You know, what is it like? It's great. And we have to make the change bit by bit. We have to be prepared to be uncomfortable. This is going to be a transition time, getting back into how we operated before, but how we are moving forward.
Because it's not the same. It's just not the same.
And you will see who has taken that time away from Broadway to do the work for themselves and who has come back to it with fresh eyes and who's come back to it with the same eyes. And then you make your choice accordingly of,
yeah.
Am I a part of this? Are we moving? Then you do that for yourself. And that's why I'm grateful for the journey of, again, this process and this show and how we've grown together as a company, as creatives, as artists.
Yeah. Was it collaborative? Like was there a lot of conversation going on in the room?
Always.
The progressing and the sort of like, okay, no, how are we doing this differently? You know, what can we bring to this that's different?
Oh yeah, the consciousness of everything, you know, it definitely was a thing pre-pandemic and was in a good place then. And I was excited to do the work then. It didn't turn into something completely different, but everybody just kind of expanded our eyes and honed in on what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the space made available to continue to have conversation. And then the things that excited me were coming into the room and there were things implemented into the script that I say in my everyday life that I'm not intentionally like, hey, let's put this in the show. I feel like this needs to be something we get across. It was like, oh, you all were just actually listening to how I communicate.
Mm.
Things of, you know, in this new world, we always, in introductions and meet and greets, it's, you know, how I say your name, your pronouns, all the things.
Right.
And I genuinely say all the time, all things with respect. That's where I identify. That's where I live. Call me whatever, as long as it's with love and respect. And finding those moments to teach people how to expand the way they see. Because there were definitely moments where Casey Nicolau would say, okay, Jay and the girls, Jay and the syncopators, Jay and the so-and-so, or, you know, and I'd be like, you could also just say the girls in this moment. If I am not being if I am being Daphne, or if I am with the girls, I'm one of the girls. And I said all things with respect. That is inclusive of this moment. So finding fun and respectful ways to just be like, hey, I gave you permission. I gave you consent. But the understanding how people are conditioned, you see a thing, so you're like, oh, it's that thing.
And people are delicate, you know. People are afraid of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. And I think that's because, like you were saying, like not all things have been treated with respect. And that has to go in both directions.
Yeah.
So like when, if there is a correction being made or a suggestion or an ask, that is made with respect too. And that way people are not feeling necessarily called out, because I think then that friction makes the transition even harder. It makes that change, that shift, that mindset shift, the opening of the mind, it makes it even more challenging. And there's people are, I find people are like more resistant to opening their mind if they're met with resistance. You know what I mean? I'll say, like, you know, I'm sure you've had countless conversations with countless outlets about, you know, how wonderful the show is and how much fun the show is. I mean, that's the other piece of this, is that like the show is really fun and it's just a good time. And you sort of like, I was talking to my fiance about it. And it's like, we're recommending the show to people because we're like, we want them to be like, oh, it's a big, fun Broadway musical. And then you leave having this perspective shift, like having your mind open in a way that's non-aggressive, in a way that's, it's easy to understand that there is, you know, and I really identify with the idea that like, it's beyond what the label is. The label is, it's kind of arbitrary. It doesn't really matter. It's about the human being and respecting the human being wherever they are in that moment, in that day.
It's something I had a conversation with Kevin McCullum, our producer at Doubtfire, during the pandemic. We were talking about, he got together with all of the Black cast members to like have a moment with us to see how we felt in the industry. And this is like top of pandemic, June of 2020. Like, and it was a fresh moment of like, hey, speak to me. Let me see your perspective. Let me understand your experience in this world and the things. And in that moment, it came to me, and I've operated from this way since, of we have to operate with conscious sensitivity. The awareness that every human being brings their own experience to every given moment. I could say any number of things in our conversation, and based on your experience, you could respond a specific way. And I may take it personally and think it has something to do with me, when actuality, it has nothing at all. But I have to be conscious and sensitive to your existence and your being. And it's just a matter of taking that second to think outside of yourself. To be like, oh, yes, this is my perspective, but let me be also aware that human is bringing their own however many years and experiences to this given moment. And it doesn't have to do all with me. We have to remove a bit of our ego from how we operate.
Oh my God. I think that's like the most important thing. And I think it goes both ways. Like,
oh, for sure.
When, like, the example that I feel like I've been coming up with, or that I feel like I've been hearing a lot, is like, in the context of, I mean, certainly in the context of a deeply personal conversation, right? And something, you know, you address something and then someone has a reaction, and then it starts to become a personal thing, when really it has nothing to do with either person. It's about each person's personal experience. But the context that I find helpful to like illustrate this is like, let's say someone comes and sees your show. Whether they feel positive or negative, whatever it is they feel, it really has nothing to do with you. Your skills and abilities and talents are kind of secondary to their own personal experience, because their reaction is based on who they are and where they're at in that particular moment on that day. And whether they resonate with you or not, or they resonate with the show or not, it really has nothing to do with you.
Truly.
But that's hard. I think as artists, that's very hard to remove ourselves. We have a tendency to wrap our ego in the work that we do. And I don't know if that's conditioning or if that's just like the industry as a whole, but it's hard to like take that second and be like, wait, this isn't about me. I didn't get that job, not because I'm not talented, but because they didn't resonate with what I was bringing in that moment because of who they are.
That's why I'm so grateful to my mother again for how she's raised me in so many ways. From a very young age, I've always been musical and artistic in the things, and my brother as well. And she raised us to understand that our gifts were not about us.
Ooh.
We were given these things to be of service, to do things with them, to use these gifts and give it out. It is something that I have to do. I cannot hold on to this thing and be precious about it and be like, it is mine. I've been given this thing and I have been able to like, no, I have the things and I have the tools, but I have to do this in order to serve something else. It is bigger and greater than me. And in those moments of like reading reviews, I have the perspective to be able to be like, well, this is how you're choosing to do your job today.
Mm.
This is how you're responding based on your experience.
Right.
And how that is clouded by possibly others' perspectives and what you need to get across. Great, great, great. Got it. I'm glad that's how you're doing your job today. I can groundedly read the things and be like, great, all right, wonderful. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent.
It doesn't have an effect because ultimately you're the vessel. You're like, okay, well, you're receiving that in the way that you're receiving that. And that is—
You receive that, and then I also get, I need to treat my son better. That I'll take that review.
Right. And both of those things are, again, have nothing to do with you. Like
Those are your own experiences.
Right. You're channeling something greater.
And it was things I was grateful to have the conversations as we were building the show of course, the consciousness and always having the conversations about how it will be received and perceived from the public and all the things and them trying to think of head of review, whatever. And there were moments where I had to say, or can we also just create art that causes conversation? Is that not what artists do?
Mm.
Can we? Yes, we have to be responsible. Yes, we have to be conscious and do the work. But at some point, we're not going to reach everyone in the way that it's not going to be a universal reception. So we have to stand firm in whatever our vision is, be honest and truthful, do the thing, and then let it lie.
Hmm. Yeah, which is it's like trusting the process in a way, but and I want to articulate that in a more clearly in the sense that like it's about let's focus on our process. Let's focus on what we're doing and how this is impacting and changing us and what it looks like to do the show 8 times a week and how we operate in that space and how we treat one another and let the rest of it fall. Let it'll be what it will be.
True.
But what we can control is what we can control. And that's like who we are, how we show up for one another, how we treat one another, how we treat this process.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is out of our hands.
And that was, again, the beauty of doing that with these people, of building that trust, of coming into the room with truth and authenticity being our foundation as human beings, as artists, and how we were approaching the work. It brought me such joy, even the evolution of pre-pandemic, we had done a reading and we were doing a presentation and I showed up one day in like a black romper, some sparkly shoes, and Casey Nicole, I was like, I love this. You look great today. This is beautiful. But for the presentation, can you get some pants? just for the sake of producers, so they get like a clean, like, so they're not like skewed by what they. And of course, understanding pre-pandemic thought of being like, I get that. I'll go, you know, find some pants at TJ Maxx. And I was like, no, I'm not going to buy pants for this moment. I'll try to go home. Looked up, traffic was too heavy. And I was like, no, this is just what they're getting today. If my clothes get in the way of the work you need, then this is not the work for me. And I had settled in my spirit, Dave, this is what, if I don't move forward with the project, then great.
Because of my pants.
Because that would get in the way of you seeing the work you needed. And again, that would have shown me, then I'm not the human for you to do this thing. But luckily, moving forward, I remained the human they needed. And I got to come back into the room and remain authentic to who I am. The way I came into rehearsal and Maxi dresses in jumpsuits and all the things, and it never got in the way of the work. And that was respected. And it was like, okay, great. Yeah. Because this is how I feel today. If this gets in the way, trust, I will be the first to say, let me take this off. This is not helping me.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not doing this for the sake of like trying to be in. No, I'm just being me. And creating that safe space to encourage it in others.
Right.
For people making the little choice of being like, oh, I'm going to wear a dangly earring today because this is just what brings me joy. Or Casey would come in during rehearsal and be like, oh, you look so comfortable. And I'm like, yes, that was the point of me putting this maxi dress on. You too can put on fabric that looks like this. I'm like, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's fun and flouncy, but it's also like practical. I love.
You I can be comfortable cute
and comfortable.
And comfortable. That's a real thing.
It's possible.
Yes. And listen, I think that's really, I think that's powerful medicine in the sense that, like, you know, in the context of like auditioning, it's to go in a room and say, this is where I'm at. This is who I am. And if this is going to get in the way of the work for you, then I'm not the person for you. And if what I'm bringing isn't what you're seeking, then all good. No hard feelings. But
anytime I wear those sparkly shoes now, like, and I wore those, actually, they're like those sparkly happy face, like they look like happy face emojis. And I wore them to my audition, and I've seen interviews where Casey is mentioned, and he has said to me, he was like, I walked in the room and he saw those shoes and was like, this person. It's like, I like them. Like the shoe choice alone, it was like, right.
It makes a difference.
Yeah, it's those little things, encouraging and again, giving that space to be like, hey, you know, we all can just do whatever we want to. We can make ourselves happy, right? We don't have to live based on someone else's label or limit or compartmentalization.
Yeah, what has that been like for you in like in this industry? Like, have you felt the pressure of like square peg round hole at all, especially in the beginning?
Oh, it's amazing that the bigger, longer journey of that, of having gotten into musical theater. And I was looking yesterday of like, I took my first headshots like 14 years ago and being like, ooh, that human and what they thought they were going to be auditioning for and being, and like, okay, great. I've got to be the leading man, and I've got to be, okay, if I want a successful career, these are the parts that I have to look at and be
right,
and fit into that thing. And I was preparing myself. And even at the time, like starting to explore drag and having to be like, nope, let me keep that hidden because I don't want to be pigeonholed as that one thing. And that's going to keep me. And little did I know that drag would lead me to my Broadway debut. That thing that I was like trying to hide and suppress and be like, oh, no, keep that over there. Was that thing that like made me special and really brought me to a place of elevation and being like, ah, no, that's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
And so it is fun for me to have these opportunities. I have fun in my fluidity and the ability to be like, yes, you may think I'm limited to that thing, but I also am capable of If I am an artist, if I am a creative, give me the room and the space and I'll show you what's possible. Doing things like Velma Kelly at the Muni.
Oh.
Having that opportunity that, of course, me, again, check back in with little me who was obsessed with the movie when it came out and like,
of course,
watched it incessantly, never imagining, but like watching I Can't Do It Alone, like, work. Yes. And then getting the opportunity to do it and be like, oh, no, yeah, I'm a capable human of doing this. I can, yep, nope, I can relate. I can tap into, let me tell the story. And given that space and that opportunity, freed me.
Yeah, when did that happen? Like, when did that switch start to happen?
Oh, God. I mean, Kinky Boots played a large part in that.
Of course, but like, what led to Kinky Boots, I guess, is the better question.
It all just kind of like unfold one, these stepping stones of, I guess I have to, it has to go back to, given the opportunity, my drama showcase at AMDA. We were auditioning scenes and our director handed us a scene. And it was like me and six women. And I thought I was supposed to play there was like one male role in the scene. He was like, no, I wanted you to play Angelessa, who was like a female wrestler in this scene from Cementville. He's like, oh, you were a big dude. I just wanted to see how you play it. And we did the scene. He was like, great, you're doing it in the showcase. And I was like, wait, what? You want me to do what? And I was also doing a scene from Take Me Out. So I literally did a scene from Take Me Out, blackout transition, do a quick change into female wrestler in this scene for my drama showcase. And that started the spark of like, okay, I'm all right. Y'all are getting to see this side of me. And then I went to Tokyo Disney and was doing jazz show during the day and would go back to my apartment at night and play in makeup and be on photo booth, lip syncing the songs and like playing around and finding it. And my friends are like, you have to do this when you get back to New York. You have to like do drag. And I'm like, oh God, no, I could never. This is, oh. And that just snowballed.
Yeah.
And I did do drag in the city and competitions and had my own shows and hosted and did I was in nightlife.
What was your drag name, girl?
Oh, Crystal Demure.
Crystal Demure, honey.
Oh, I had shows at Industry. I was doing shows with Shaquita and Hard.
Oh,
like,
my God.
All over the place. Like, Bartini on 10th. Like, I was in nightlife.
Yeah, you were doing it.
So all of those things, it just snowballed, and I was picking up these tools along the way unknowingly that just kind of put that in the arsenal, put that over, take that on. And now it just all worked in my favor. Look at that cutie.
I know. She's like, what are you doing? I know. Hi, I see you. You can just take a rest, you can just lay down.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, and sometimes we have to tell ourselves that. Just rest.
Just rest. Just
rest.
Rest.
Because talk about like all the things happening. This is the only being I can control.
Mm-hmm.
And so with all of the things and the being pulled in every direction, I have to tell myself to rest.
Yeah.
Those moments where my friends are like, hey, can we hang out this week? Can we do the thing? I love you, friend. No. I will see you when I see you.
I'll see you when, right now you're in it. Right now you got, right now. Like,
or, you know, being like, hey, are you going to be here with these other people? Let's kill all the birds with one stone. And
right,
knowing just, when to say when.
Yeah. But that's hard too. Like, that's hard too, setting those boundaries, you know?
But we have to, and we have to normalize that for ourselves.
Yeah.
The ability to say no and that be a complete sentence. Even the my urge to want to explain things sometimes, but like, no, I can't because, no.
Period. And letting that be enough.
And the people who know you and love you, they get it.
Yeah, of course.
I'm so appreciative of the love that I have and the support. That's one of the things I pray and I meditate about every morning is the support that I have that I'm grateful to have had. Because again, little me, I've always been a people person, but to really have the friendships and the community that I have, I'm so grateful to be supported in a way that I know where I can get my strength. My friendships fuel my ministry. It is my friends and those moments of like being able to just sit and be and like let your hair down and have those people love on you that fuels me to do what I have to do. And in that same respect, it's like, I love you enough to also be like, I need my space. I need my solitude. Christmas and New Year's Eve, people were like, you can come here. You're welcome here. Like, come over here. I sat in this apartment by myself both of those holidays and was in peace, in gratitude, and in solitude. Like, I brought in the new year in my shower. I was fully like, I'm coming into the new year doing self-care.
Yes, cleansed.
Literally just like put on a Hue light, put on some jazz music, and wash the old and step into the new. Like, mm-hmm. I put on a face mask and was like, happy new year to me.
I'm blessed.
Truly.
Yeah. Community is huge. Something I talk about with everybody, I feel like, on this podcast is like, community, community, community. Like, it is so vital to your spirit, like, to be able to move throughout the world in a way that I don't know. I just am not able to be my full self without my community around me. You know, it enables me to feel like I'm free to express myself in the way that I want to express myself. It enables me to feel through the things I need to feel through, whatever that thing is that's coming up. I'm able to have the space to process that in a way that's productive and helpful and caring. And especially being in a partnership, there are things that my community gives me that my partnership does not.
Yeah.
And that was another hump I had to get over to be like, oh, wait a second. My partnership isn't supposed to give me all the things and more. That's not the point. My community.
I've got soulmates and different beings.
Exactly.
And in different ways. And they don't all have to be exclusive to being a like limited way of seeing the thing.
But again, it's breaking these norms and these binaries and these sort of, you know, societal constructions. Yes, the limitations that have been put upon us, but for no other reason than it helps other people move throughout the world, right? It's like much easier to process.
It is a compartmentalization for somebody else.
Yes.
You can give me this label and put this thing on me so that it makes sense to
you.
When in actuality, you're not even giving me the space to be all that I am. Because that's your limited perception of what you think that thing is. But have you taken the time to ask me specifically what that means to me? My queerness is not the same as your queerness or somebody else's queer. It is a different thing. There are different layers and colors and strokes to that thing. Talk about community. One of my favorite, one of my cherished memories from opening night was my brother got to come be with me for opening night. And we had done the show, done our little cast after party, and then we did the after party at Industry. And my brother's like, I'm down. Like, I'm, you know, I'm going with you. This is your night. Like, give me your bag. Let's go. And we're in Industry. And again, I used to do drag shows there. These are my people. I know these bartenders. I know the manager. Like, and we're like letting our hair down. This is the end of the night. And I'm turning up with my castmates. And my brother is like watching me be in my community. And he just took a moment and was like, well, this is big for us. He's like, thank you. Because I had stood there and told him, I was like, yeah, oh, I used to do drag shows here. Keisha Carr was there and she had just finished her show. So I'm like talking to her and I'm like, oh yeah, that's, you know, we used to do shows and this and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, let me take a picture with her. Let me do the things. And he sees how I am supported in this city and in this place. He's like, oh, this is your community. These are your people. And you're good. You're like, oh, you got. It clicked for him in that moment. Of like, yeah, when you find your people, that community, that space where you can fully just be you, it makes all the difference for you. And then that also can permeate your life and affect those around you. That freedom can expand.
It took me a long time to be able to show up as my full self in every realm of my life. Because I felt that in my community for a long time. But I remember someone asking me the question, like, are you the same person when you're with your family, when you're with your friends, when you're with your partner, when you're at work? And for a long time, the answer was no. Now I'm proud to say that now I'm at a point, I don't know if it's just age or it's just comfort or whatever it is, to just be like, no, I'm me across the board.
It's definitely gotten to that place. Every day, just the little thing of, again, choosing what I wear.
Right.
I'm like, how do I feel today? What does the day call for? And what is going to get me through that thing? And how, as Patti LaBelle would say, let me get up and check my drag. What is the drag for the day? Breathing.
Because right, it's all drag.
We're all born naked. The rest of this is the drag I'm choosing today.
Right.
And so I'm like, great. What is the drag that's going to get me through the day? And doing whatever resonates to me. There was a time where I would let those other voices get in the way and be like, nope, that's too much. That's too extra. Ooh, don't be that loud. Don't. No, I feel like being this loud today. No, I feel like putting on a sparkly thing because it's Thursday. Like,
people are
like, oh, wait. Right. And they're like, where are you going? I left the house. This is how I feel. You too have the permission in the space to do whatever you feel like doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what came up initially was I was like, that's radical. That's radical to be able to say the perspective of it's all drag. Like, everything that we're doing is a performance. You understand? Everything that we're wearing, the way that we show up in the world, the way that we talk, it's all performative. And to have the consciousness to say, wait a minute, I can choose. And that's why I'm so moved every time you go, you too. And that's what's being communicated. I think that's what's so radical is that it's like, it's actually not radical. It's like, it's actually not that crazy. It's just
so,
that it's so,
so simple.
Right. It's so simple, but it's so against what we've been programmed with.
Yeah.
That it feels like this radical act when it really is simple.
Yeah. For the longest time, pre-pandemic, I always was very adamant about remaining non-political. I didn't vote. I stayed out of so much for a lot of reasons. Like, as a teenager, I did Youth Legislative Assembly in North Carolina, where we were the Youth Senate. And we wrote bills. We were like, and some of our bills went to the actual Senate in North Carolina. Like, it was a whole thing. And to watch at that age, the primping and priming to become these people and do these things, I was like, ew, ew, ew. And so it took me out of it for a long time. And then in our pandemic life and taking time to assess, I had this realization for myself of, again, for years, people would double take long before I made bold fashion choices and things of just looking at me. And then someone sent me an interview that Toni Morrison was doing. And she said, as artists, our existence is innately political. That's what artists do. We comment on the times. Our voices are political without trying. That's what an effective artist. And then I had the realization for myself as a Black queer human in this world, if I leave my home, I'm making a political statement. So I might as well make a statement. I might as well actually give you something to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to encourage in people when they look at me, and I just tuned in to, again, so many times people would look at me and be like, oh, I could never do that. I love the shoes you have on. I could never. Or, oh, I love this thing. You look so comfortable or confident. I could never. I'm like, no, you too can do it. It's just fabric. Somebody just told you it had to be male or female. It's just fabric. It doesn't have to be so convoluted.
And why can't you? You know what I mean? Like,
what
why?
Voice told you you couldn't?
You right. Like, who says? Who said?
Who said? Somebody told me I couldn't, and yet here I am.
And here I am.
And that someone was also my mother. In the sense of, she was the first one in my family who knew I did drag.
Mm.
And she went through her own process of how she processed that. Like, she took it and then called me a prostitute at one point because she was like, what are you doing for this money? Like, what are you out here? And fully said to me, this is not God's plan for your life. This is not how we raised you. What are you doing? What are you trying to get at? What are you become? What's happening? But I had to be able to detach my attachment to my mother, that woman who I love, who I adore, who has taught me so many wonderful things.
Mm.
And I had to get her voice out of my head for a while, and still working on that in a lot of ways, of being like, yeah, but that's your limited perception of the being I was created to be. I have to tune in to what resonates here. It doesn't have to make sense to anybody else. This is not your experience or journey to have. Yes, as a mother, you have a connection and a tie to me. But I'm letting you into the being that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And even amongst that conversation of like saying to her, you know, being non-binary and things, I was like, there's so much more. I had a conversation with her last year when I was in Doubtfire. I kept my show face on one day and I caught a glimpse of myself in the train doors. It was like, oh, little me would be so happy at the freedom I just like live in.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next thought was, oh, how does that make my mother feel? Because the perception of, she had this little boy and what she thought that was going to be. And here's the being you got. And I objectively asked her, I was like, how does that make you feel? Your perspective, not from your child's point of view. I'm not asking for permission. I'm not asking for acceptance. How do you feel? And luckily she said, you know, she didn't feel the need to like defend me or anything. She's like, you're being you. I see it. You're being true to who you are. I get it. Beyond my understanding. And she had to get that early on of like, yes, you're my mother, but you're also just here to like lead and guide, but let me be the individual God put me on this earth to be.
Well, and in a kind of crazy way, like by you holding space for how she's feeling, you're demonstrating the ability to say, hey, I'll hold space for whatever you're feeling and wherever you're at. Can you hold space for who I am and my whole being? And that's, it's a challenge. Like that's, it is, you know, again, breaking her perceptions. Be like, wait a second. What?
Because I'm like, I'm trying to be this love of God that you all taught me that is so unconditional. I'm trying to be that.
Yes.
You all have taught me what that is supposed to look like. But a lot of y'all, again, have not been actually living that thing. Because if it's unconditional, there's no addendum to be like, I've met my father in those moments of like, we were having breakfast, just the two of us at Cracker Barrel, of all places. And he was just like rambling and talking. And I am kind of the human that creates space for him in that way. He doesn't normally do that. And he said to me, he was like, I'm so proud of all the work you're doing and where you are in your life. And, you know, I'm just really proud of you. I mean, I don't like your lifestyle, but, you know, I'm proud of. And old me had the prior to doing the work for myself would have taken that and it would have weighed me down and like kept me in this place of like, oh, you know, I'm doing something wrong. Or I'm like, no, I'm being effective in this earth. I'm ministering to people in a way that is beyond anybody else's understanding. There is a ministry I have that is true to me.
Yeah.
Because since I was a kid, they always called me like little reverend, and I thought that was going to look a certain way, but now I'm like, oh no, the ministry is still there. And so it's funny, and it probably will happen one day, and I'm just speaking it into existence. But that rude challenge where she makes the girl like write a book and like, what is your book and sell your book? I was like, oh, if that was my challenge, my book would be called Pumps in the Pulpit.
Wow.
And that is definitely a journey that I'm like, there's a lot of layers there, but
a lot.
There's a story to be told with these pumps in the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that. And that's why I continue to use that language for myself of being like, no, I still remain such a spiritual being. I am still connected in that way.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this. Like, what is your relationship with spirituality and God and ministry? Like, just talk to me about that.
It's evolving every day. It is one of the things that I've been, again, talk about the intention, the purpose, and the love. During the pandemic, I started a habit for myself of I wanted a better prayer life. I wanted to just reconnect. That's something I've always loved. My grandmother, my mom's mom, every night was always by her bed praying, saying everyone's name out loud, doing just that fervent seeking and prayer. And when she died, I wanted to pick that up in a way. And that was years ago, and I kind of lost touch with it. And so during the pandemic, I very intentionally created an altar. And I was like, I have to create a space that I go to every day and meet myself, meet spirit, meet God, meet the divine, whatever, and also allow that to expand from what I've been taught.
Mm.
So there are crystals on that. I like Palo Santo. I do sage. There are things. And I meet myself there every morning. That is the first place I go out of my bed. I have my routine of say the Lord's Prayer, do my own personal prayer, do a chant of some lyrics of a song that my friends wrote that like resonates beautifully with me. I love, it's a lullaby that they sing, but it says, I am what God made, beautiful and brave. Every fiber of me is perfectly lovely. I will be myself today. And then from there, I allow my prayer and meditation to go wherever I am in that day and in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I may sit there for 2 minutes. I may sit there for 10. I may sit whatever it is. Then I read this Pocketful of Miracles book I have. And I let that thing, but I have to go there first to set my intentions, to like take a moment to breathe, to ground myself, and to just have a moment greater than me.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, is like, it sounds like, which I really resonate with, this innate desire to be a part of something larger than yourself.
Yeah. And it's, again, that just starting my day with intention. I don't care if I'm hungover. I don't, like, and again, it's like, I will come to that thing, do the set there. But as long as that is the first thing I do every day, I can take on whatever the day has to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful to find the little things, the little tools, like that Pocket Full of Miracles book, when I meet myself there every day, and to find little jewels and gems to be able to take throughout the day, throughout my life, that like just are tools in the arsenal to be like, great, I tap into that thing. And to see how the universe works seasonally, how to see, you know, the solstices and all the things and the times of year, and to click into those things and be like, oh, this time of year usually is this kind of time where I am in this place. Oh, this now makes sense to me better because this is where stars are, or the things are that. We ignore signs that exist in our lives every day. We ignore our own bodies. Our bodies give us signs, and we're like, oh, yeah, that's fine, whatever, yeah. You're like, but also if you address that thing, it will probably make other things in your life a lot easier, or like, but we're so busy worried about others' perception and others' experiences that we're not in tune with ourselves. And again, mother says it, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else? And loving yourself is a hard thing. Love in general is a hard thing. People sell it as this like Valentine's Day cutesy boxes, roses, candies, all the things. And you're like, no, are you willing to put in the work? Are you willing to show up, to look in the mirror and tell yourself the truth? The naked truth of like, okay, this is what it is. Now, how do I address this? How do I focus on this? How do I? There's so much work that goes into love.
And it's simple, right? Like, it's hard work.
Oh, yeah.
And yet love is, you know, I think love is who we are. Like, that is what you talk about. You can talk about God. People call it sunlight of spirit. You can call it.
I was about to say, yeah, if God is love and we are made in the image of, then we are
so again, love.
I'm just out here. I'm trying to just be the personification of that thing.
Of love. Right.
That is what I aimed, intention, purpose, love.
Love. So where are those sitting for you right now? What, where are you at in the intention, purpose, love today?
Oh, I'm intentionally meeting the moment. Mm-hmm. With the purpose that I am here to be effective in this earth and make a change, and that I'm capable of that. And again, just being love, walking in love and sharing that daily bit by bit, and also knowing how to protect my love.
Mm.
I don't have to give it to everyone in the way of like serving them and like exerting myself. I also have to be like, I love you and I can love you from a distance.
Right. And that is loving.
That is loving. Because the depths, the widths, and the heights of my love are complex, and you don't get every corner of that. Everybody doesn't get every part of that love. Again, love is, it's complex in the way of, again, it's so conditionalized that it is seen as like hard to say love. You're like, oh, I can't say I love you until I'm ready. And no, I love everyone.
Right.
And I'm trying to normalize that with friends, with people, like ending conversations. You're like, I love you. Make it casual. There are shades of love. There are levels of love. And it's so funny to watch people struggle with love.
it's a lot, you know, people, it can be overwhelming, you know, because, yeah. Because listen, if love is everything and all everything is love, then I get it that can feel like a lot for yeah. people, you know, but I'm so on the same page in the sense of, you know, I love everybody in different ways, shapes, and forms. But like I feel I have love. And if I can show up to a moment with intention and be honestly in that moment with that person and meet them where they are, then that is love right there.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Well, I have loved this.
I was about to say, this conversation has been a lot of love, truly.
A lot of love. And I'm not surprised at all. But I'm really, I feel a lot of joy and a lot of love, you know, around the fact that, like, of course this is what you're doing right now. Of course this is the role that you're in. Of course this yeah. is the show that you're in. Of course this is the moment that you're in right now. Of course. Like, it feels so aligned. It just feels so aligned. And again, like, this conversation to me, it was like, oh yeah. Of course this is where you're at right now. So I'm just so excited for you. The show is so great. It really is. And I know you know, but it really is. It as a piece, it's a really, really good piece. The piece is really, really strong. And the way that it's been developed and really every single part of the production, from my perspective and what my experience is,
yeah.
There wasn't anything that I sat there going, lighting, sound, orchestrations, vocal arrangements, across the board, costumes, dialogue, performances. I really was, and that doesn't happen all the time. That rarely happens, that I leave a show going, check.
We have definitely been blessed, and we look around every day and take the time to appreciate the beauty that exists at the Schubert Theater. In each of us as human beings, the love that we pour into each other as a company is so special, and it is not beyond us. It is not lost on us. And it is something we truly cherish, from every perspective. People will probably get sick of the amount of love that we pour into each other of like, enough already. You're like, okay, we get it. You love each other. You like, we really do pour into each other because there's so much brewing on every level. There's mm-hmm. so much potential. There's so much life. There's so much to hold on to and to take in. It's like people, I love that people have already come back to see the show many times.
Oh, yeah.
I love that because I'm like, yeah, you could watch a different human every time and get like something special or something different. And there are choices being made everywhere.
Girl, there are choices being made. people are giving. And I gotta tell you, like, as a theater person, that is the most entertaining part, is like to be like, she is serving right now. Like, you better
everywhere
give a leg
you look.
Everywhere. Every moment.
From
I was
top
like,
of
damn.
Shelf, like, yeah. Yeah, it is, I feel like, truly one of the hardest working ensembles I have ever seen and experienced. Like, everyone is giving. All cylinders ablaze. And it's like, we circle up every day before the show and just pour into each other. We're like, all right, let's get on this journey together and go.
And I think we feel it. I think. You know, I mean, not everybody, but I felt that when I saw the show. And one of the things, I don't remember where I heard this from. It's probably like an Instagram post or a podcast or something, but like, the Dalai Lama said something about what makes art beautiful is witnessing the artist go through a transformation. The art itself is simply, it's there. It's just, it's existing. But what makes something beautiful, at least to him, was witnessing the journey of the artist in the piece and watching how it is changing that human being in that moment. And everything we talked about was a confirmation of that happening and what I witnessed in seeing the show, and that like it is changing you guys in a way. And again, in maybe the most simplest terms, it is simply like you guys returning to love every night and every day. Like that is what it feels like, is that like you guys are just tapping into this greater thing that is love and allowing it to exist in that theater 8 times a week.
Yeah.
So I'm psyched for you. I'm thrilled.
Thank you.
And it's gonna be a fun year, and yeah, I'm just so excited, and I'm grateful that we got to do this too, because this is always you never know what you're gonna get. But to show up with intention, purpose, and love. I'm gonna carry that with me. I'm not letting you keep that.
I literally, again, having to get my mother out of my brain, I don't have any tattoos and I want to get one. And I had to tell my mother, just so you know, I'm getting my first tattoo. This is what it is. And it is, I want the words intention, purpose, and love, because again, those are the things I live by. And it's finally at this point where it's like, oh no, I want to put that on my body, because I want that constant reminder that this is what I this is my foundation. Mm-hmm. I want it near my heart. I want it in this place. This is the thing. And this feels like the time for me to do it. And I had to get her out of my head, because she was like, oh, don't defile your body. Don't do the thing. And oh, my baby. And I'm like, yeah. Love you, sweet. Yeah, but I'm still going to do it.
And it's going to be beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this, Jay. Truly, truly, truly. I love you.
I love you too.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.